there a doctor in the house?
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you.
Doctor.
It's time for Advanced Medicine Monday with Dr. Rashid Batar.
I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer.
A doctor, not a mechanic.
I'm a doctor, not a coal miner.
The doctor is in.
Hey, Dr. Batar, we missed you this weekend. I knew you couldn't come up for it, but certainly thought about you a lot because, like, the gang got back together, including your friend of mine, Dr. Antonio Jimenez, and we were up there at Total Health in Canada. You just have to say the word and let me know. I'll get you invited up next year if you want to go. It's a little chilly even this time of year, but it was all right.
That's excellent. Yeah, unfortunately, I was in the middle of doing some traveling myself, so I wasn't able to make it. But maybe next year we can talk about that. That'd be cool.
Yeah, we had Del Bigtree. I shared a booth with him for the weekend. We had a great time. He was talking about the religion of science, and that he's a preacher, man, on the air, and also when he's doing his lectures. That was fun. And I just got to say, you know, Dr. Jimenez, you've known him longer than I have, but he's just such a good-hearted man that, what can I say? My heart is happy that he's out there helping folks that seemingly have lost hope and lost help. And so, like I said, it's nice to see docs that are doing good work out there.
Yeah, I mean, he's been doing cancer stuff for many years. Probably right about the same time that I started is when he was also starting, so over 20 years.
Yeah, it was cool today. He's on the plane. He got rerouted because of weather, and he got a new book, and he texted me, "Hey, Robert, I'm reading this thing about in 1911, they were talking about the smallpox vaccine, how it was contaminating the blood of patients and causing cancer." He says, "The homeopaths knew it. They were given remedies for this." I'm hearing his voice in my own voice saying it, and I'm like, "Exactly. Isn't this awesome?" He's like, "Yeah, I want to learn more about this." So I love that, just like you, always learning, hungry to know more, hungry to be able to help folks. And, you know, looking into that at a deep level, all of these vaccine relationships to chronic diseases, including cancer today.
Well, you know, for me personally, I feel and have always felt that once you stop learning, there's no purpose left for you on the planet, and that's when God takes you. So I'm not quite ready to go yet, so I figured I need to keep on learning.
Absolutely. And you've also seen the link, and we've talked about it on the air, between vaccines, childhood through adulthood, and cancer. It's not just autism and other neurological issues and other chronic issues of the gut. I mean, cancer is one of those things that can be connected to the things that are injected in these vaccines even today.
Yeah, absolutely. There's all sorts of different things that are put into vaccines that are definitely oxidative stress-inducing, and whether or not you'd consider them all carcinogenic or not, but certain substances definitely are. And there's, of course, mutated human cell lines, and there's all sorts of different metals and chemicals and components that are not considered to be safe. For example, like formaldehyde, you know, some bombing fluid. And what does formaldehyde have to do with vaccines? Why are they adding that? Why are they adding DNA adducts from dogs and chickens and monkeys and all sorts of different components within the vaccines that whether or not they're carcinogenic or not, they certainly are not health-inducing. So it doesn't make any sense.
Well, speaking of vaccines, we got to do another deep dive into vaccines. We've got a couple of stories to open this Advanced Medicine edition of the Robert Scott Bell Show with Dr. Rashid Batar here. And this is how we play it.
In some parts of this country, vaccine rates have fallen below the magic number of 90%. The magic number of 90%.
Abracadabra. Abracadabra, yo.
All right, y'all, forget herd immunity. How about specific immunity of one person that gets the shot? Did you see this, Dr. Batar? New research claiming vaccine resistance is happening. Now, when I first read the headline, I thought, well, of course, we've been resisting that for years. But no, they're actually talking about the interaction with the immune system, how now the immune system is rejecting this whole idea of artificial induction of antibodies and it's playing an end around it, so there's resistance to the actual vaccines by your own cells.
Yeah, so this is not surprising at all, because if you think about it from a logical standpoint, the entire premise behind a vaccine is to elicit an immune response to anything that's considered to be foreign, which is described as either a haptin or an antigen. Now, if you give something in the body, like a vaccine that contains many foreign substances, theoretically, you are supposed to, your immune system is supposed to form an antibody, or create an antibody from the antigen, with antigen is actually, the B cells see the antigen as being something foreign, they create an antigen receptor site, then the antigen receptor site form, basically is a template or a mold, and creates mobile antigen receptor sites. In other words, an antigen receptor site and the antibody is exactly the same, except that an antigen receptor site is attached to the B lymphocyte. So now you've got this mobile antigen receptor site, which is really an antibody. That's how the body makes the antibodies. And it finds the antigen or the foreign substance and binds to it. And that's what creates the antigen antibody reaction or shuts it down. And in this particular case, if you're giving people vaccines that contain these foreign substances, then it follows logic that the body is going to form an antigen response or an antibody that's going to be specific to the vaccine, and that's exactly what they're describing in this article.
Well, and also, if we think about we do a lot. We try to explain this to folks. The whole idea of inducing an antibody is if that were the be-all, end-all, the holy grail of immunity. The reality is we got to go back to the law of the terrain. Antoine Béchamp, Claude Bernard, these brilliant doctors, physicians, scientists, researchers, that said it is about the terrain that provides either the healthy balance or an imbalance in opportunistics, which you write about, of course, so well and have lectured on for years, including in the 9 steps to keep the doctor away, the opportunistic. So you can have all the antibodies you want, but if the body is imbalanced and toxic and deficient, and partly due to the injection of toxic poisons that don't belong in even ingestibles, you are going to facilitate disease regardless of your antibody or titers or whether you have or have not those things.
What do you mean by you're going to share disease? What did you mean by that?
No, you're going to be, listen, the disease, the imbalance is happening from within. So let's say you have all the antibodies that they want to create artificially with vaccines. The fact that you polluted the body so much, you've created cellular metabolic dysfunction. You've altered the terrain, the soil of the body. So what grows there is likely more pathogenic life forms that have little or nothing to do with the antibodies that you've stimulated into existence.
Well, I think you're right there, except that I don't think that these things will create environment to allow various types of things to grow necessarily. It's very possible. You could have that the suppression of the immune system, which now allows for opportunistic infections to grow, like yeast, for example, the mycoplasma, for example, spirochetes, even parasitic type things. So that statement is I would concur with that. But overall, I think that rather than making the terrain imbalanced being the primary, I think that the secondary or maybe a tertiary issue, but the primary issue would be that by introducing all these substances into the system, mm-hmm. you're creating a toxic environment that by definition is going to not prevent the body from having an immune system that's going to be functional. So I agree with what you're saying philosophically, but I think that the opportunistic infections would be really a tertiary concern, possibly a secondary concern, definitely not a primary concern.
You've just said exactly what I said, but differently.
Yeah, well, I'm agreeing with what you're saying, but I'm looking at it from a more global perspective. So you've got opportunistic issues, yes, but altering the terrain is an important part. But this is kind of like when people talk about the gut dysbiosis that's seen in autistic kids, and that's such an issue, and they all want to address it, which I say, yes, it is an issue, but it's not the primary cause that caused autism. It's the mercury that caused the denudation of the neurofibrils, caused the suppression of the immune system, which then allows for opportunistic infections and other problems to arise, which then leads to the gut dysbiosis. But to address the gut dysbiosis by addressing the opportunistic infections, you're going to be like a dog chasing your tail, because no matter how many times you deal with those opportunistic infections, mm-hmm. the issue is the immune system is no longer working because of the mercury, and you can get rid of one infection, the secondary one's going to come. You can get rid of the second infection, the third one's going to come. It's not going to make any difference. Until you get rid of the offending substance that's causing a dysfunction in the immune system, you're not going to be able to realign the terrain so that the body can get back on track.
100% agreement. You just went deeper. That you did. You explained it better than me. But I'm coming off of little or no sleep, so I'm gonna call in an excuse, a mulligan. But no, that was exactly where we want to go with that. Now, the secondary vaccine story happens to be, of course, as they're saying, your body is now resisting the development anyway. But the whooping cough outbreaks. Whooping cough. They're like, well, everybody's being vaccinated for whooping cough, pretty much, except a few percentage points, still very minimal. But the majority of people getting whooping cough are fully vaccinated. So once again, we now have the failure, and maybe this is a 1-2 piece because they're talking about resistance to the vaccines. You know, we would argue that there is no antibody stimulation based on the failed Merck vaccine, which they had to spike rabbit's blood with antibodies artificially because they couldn't induce them in humans in the test.
Yeah, this is a massive problem. So whooping cough has been actually the live virus versus the attenuated virus. I can't remember all
the DTP versus the DTAP.
Right. So this is what the virus had actually showed, that the whooping cough vaccine, if I'm not remembering this incorrectly, it was a whooping cough vaccine, the original version of it, that actually created a problem with the sudden infant death syndrome. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
So that was one of the issues
Why they switched this thing to the acellular pertussis, but now they show that that's not eliciting the antibodies anyway. Yet, again, no discussion of terrain issues, no discussion of toxicity, heavy metals in any of these, you know, vaccine groups, so to speak, the official ones. And it's all about, if we can't get the antibodies going, if we can't outrace the, you know, the adaptations of the microbes to even the vaccines, we're done for. No discussion in immunology, at least when it comes to vaccines, about the things you and I talk about, the things you've written about in the 9 steps to keep the doctor away. Again, how do we clear the terrain? How do we get the heavy metals out? How do we get the mercury out? And if you can't do that, then as you said, you're chasing your tail, or the fire you keep putting out, another one goes off because you haven't done anything to remove the fuel for that fire. And no vaccine is going to remedy that. We'll be back with a question of the day and Dr. Bitar after this.
Can you repeat the part of the stuff where you said all about the things?
It's the Robert Scott Bell Show.
Robert, we'll be right back.
Robert Scott Bell Show.
2 hours a day, 6 days a week. Robert Scott Bell Show live on the air around the world through GCN or Holman Broadcast Radio Syndication each and every Monday. If you listen live, and it's okay if you don't, it's not requiring any expiration date, no preservatives, it never goes bad. Dr. Bitar and Advanced Medicine. We look forward to this every week. And in fact, we look forward to hearing from you all so that Dr. Bitar can share some of his clinical wisdom in addition to all the other wisdom he's got.
Excuse me, I'd like to ask you a few questions.
All right, this one's coming from Lori to RSB, Super D, and Dr. B. Dr. Bitar, my husband has skin cancer and has had it before. I give him selenium, chromium, silica, good liquid multi and minerals. He takes essential fatty acids and enzymes. I also give him chlorella. So why is he coming up with skin cancer all of the time? Thank you, as always, Lori. Now, Dr. Bitar, you know, this is one of those cases where I go, all right, what's your husband eating? What's he drinking? Is he exercising? I mean, it's like, it's not just those supplements. There are other factors involved here. Obviously, we don't know it, but maybe you have the same questions I have, Dr. Bitar.
Yeah, so it would be the same questions, but I would start my first question off with another question, and that question would be, do you think that by taking these minerals and these supplements, which are good and mm-hmm. beneficial, but do you think that taking these substances is going to magically get rid of the things that the body should not have within itself? Because that's where I think people become a little confused. They think that by taking supplements, they're going to detox. detoxification and supplementation are not synonymous. They are not the same thing. Certain supplements may help your body to function better and may help your organs of detoxification to function better, but they're certainly not going to detoxify the body. So taking all these good things, that's great. And even eating the good things and drinking clean water and exercising, these are all important aspects. But the first and foremost thing to deal with when somebody has cancer, in my book, and this is the reason that I have a difference in opinion with many other doctors that deal with cancer, and some of them are good friends of mine, mm-hmm. but they get into all these fancy treatments and they don't address toxicity issues. They simply don't address toxicity issues. I'm not going to say the name because he's a good friend of mine on the radio right now, but only up until maybe 6 years ago before he finally started doing addressing heavy metals, before he even really started checking for heavy metals. So he's a leading cancer doctor. There are many doctors like this that understand the importance of nutrition and supplementation, and they might even give lip service to detoxification, but they don't understand that that is the fundamental reason why people develop cancer. In fact, the Presidential Cancer Report in 2010 under Obama's administration came out, and it was a 60 page report, and it could be condensed down into one line, and that was that basically they agreed, that this presidential cancer panel agreed that the environmental toxicity component had not been adequately addressed, and that was the reason that the cancer epidemic was still growing.
I remember covering that with you on the air. Yeah.
Right, right. And it's available for download on our website. If you go there and go under cancer and look at the patient, new patient information, there's a tab there that you can download a number of resources, and one of those is the Presidential Cancer Report.
Dr. Bitar, real quick, is that one at drbitar.com or advancedmedicine.com? So we send them to the right place.
It's at drbitar.com. It will be at Advanced Medicine, too. It's not up there right now.
All right, drbutar.com. Those of you who are new to Dr. Bitar, it's spelled B-U-T-T-A-R, drbitar.com. Thank you for clarifying. So, I'm with you on that. Like I said, there are a lot of holistically inclined docs that are, very well schooled in a lot of great integrative and natural approaches, but they still focus on killing cancer cells more than I believe this is necessary if we are to remove those primary offending elements, particularly as we've talked about heavy metals, mercury, number one on the list typically.
Yeah, so this is a very important point, because if you can get rid of the toxic substances, then the immune system can come back online, because that's the leading cause of the immune suppression that people have to deal with. So you've got a suppression of the immune system because of all the toxicity. You get rid of the toxicity, the immune system can come back on, and that in itself will now deal with the cancer cells. Because remember, you cannot have cancer if you have an intact immune system. For people that say, no, I have an intact immune system, or my immune system is fine, or there's nothing wrong with my immune system, then you can't have cancer.
But those are the people that say, I am fine except for the cancer. I'm perfectly fine. My doctor said so, Dr. Bitar. What are you talking about? I'm perfectly fine except for the cancer. Right, folks, cognitive dissonance runs wild in the allopathic medical profession. Don't be a patient dunderhead. Listen to the Robert Scott Bell Show, Advanced Medicine, with Dr. Bitar, and you'll get beyond it. And you docs out there will, too. Hope to see some of you at Best Answer for Cancer with our good friend Annie Brandt coming up this week. We'll be right back.
Live around the world, the Robert Scott Bell Show.
Robert Scott Bell.
Rocking the health world through the power of radio. It's the Robert Scott Bell Show.
All right, back at it with Dr. Rashid Bitar. drbutar.com. Also, advancedmedicine.com. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours, not exaggerating, of archives of the show when we're together. Now searchable. Or is it just about to be searchable? I know it's a big job, Dr. Bitar, but I keep got to check it in. Got to keep checking in. See, my words are backwards. I'll get some rest tonight.
All that stuff has been done. The reason the site isn't live is because I didn't realize the content has to be tagged, either video or audio. Mm-hmm. And that is, there's a lot of content. It's going all the way back to 2000 and whatever it was, 11, 10. So that hasn't all been tagged yet, but it's all being done. And advanced medicine is still functional, but It's the search part is not live yet, and it will.
Okay.
Be, well, Robert, that does bring up another point, and we can bring it up at the bottom of the hour. Well, I guess we already are at the bottom of the hour.
Yes, yeah, I'll bring it up.
There's an announcement that I want to make, so you tell me when we can make this announcement.
Let's do it before our next story begins. What's the announcement?
Well, basically, we are going to be releasing a cardiac protocol that I believe will, within 3 months, have a market change in a person's symptomology. Now, of course, we can't make any kind of claim to cure anything, but as far as the symptoms of chest pain, of shortness of breath, diaphoresis, this type of stuff, we believe that in 90 days, there will be an improvement in symptomology. And this is something that I've been working on since 2015. In fact, you remember you sent me some things that I wanted to try to add on there, some of the homeopathics, and do you remember that? With the,
yeah, I do, I do. Okay, so did you modify and integrate thing, and now you're ready to release the protocol or program?
Yeah, exactly. We're ready to release it, but the thing is we want to now, this is something that I've been talking with some of our mutual friends about, but right now what we need to do is now we need to test the protocol and have maybe, you know, 30, 40, 50 people on video before and after and just see their experience. And so basically the announcement that I want to make is that for anybody that's listening that has any type of cardiac condition, and, you know, this may sound politically incorrect, but the worse cardiac condition, the better, not because we want to be you to have bad cardiac conditions, but because that way we can really see and test how well this works. And there are certain stipulations involved. We're going to basically knock the price down by 50% just so we can collect more data. We've got probably 20 to 25 people that have already gone through this and have had tremendous response, but the problem is that they're also getting IV treatments. So we want to now isolate people that are not getting any IV treatments. I don't believe the IV treatments are the key component, even though they do help to reduce the metal load and such, but that's not in itself all the...
You have a different focus on this protocol than... Because obviously the IV chelation, at least the thought as I've understood it, is, you know, to pull the heavy metals out. That's a primary cause of inflammation, vascular issues that lead to a coronary occlusions as the body desperately tries to repair the damage, and it continues to repair it because the metals are constantly creating the inflammatory response in the body.
That's exactly right, Robert. You hit that nail right in the head. That's exactly what it is. The problem is that in some cases, a person may not have a heavy metal load or has effectively had that heavy metal load addressed. As in my case, I've had over 600 treatments over the last 24, 25 years. But I should have not ever had any problem develop, and I did. And, you know, that's all documented. And then what I did over the last 2 years myself, 2.5 years myself, to reverse that, and very little intravenous therapies. In fact, I've probably had less intravenous therapies in the last 3 years, last year and a half, I should say, than I have ever in my life since I started integrative medicine back at Advanced Medicine since 1996. And so it is very important to get rid of the heavy metals, and there's no doubt about that. But again, in my case, all that had been removed and has been, my vascular tree was pretty clean from that perspective, but yet there were still other issues going on. And so,
Dr. Bitar, that's, I mean, I'm very excited to hear that because if you're, you know, you're one of how many, right, out there that it may not be a primary cause or it might be a secondary cause, you clean it out, you still have the issue, what do you do then, right? So the other issue is, of course, a lot of people have access problems if they need it, or maybe they don't. You give this an option, and there's probably, I'm going to assume there's not a downside there because you don't deal in toxicity in terms of adding it to the body, in terms of protocol. So this could only be a benefit even if they haven't gotten chelation. Would you say that's fair to say?
Yes, it is fair to say. And I think that it's important to recognize that a person has a heavy metal load. This obviously is not going to negate that heavy metal load, and they'll get even more profound benefits if they do remove that heavy metal load. But we're dealing with the symptomology aspect, the shortness of breath, the chest pain, the sweating, the nausea, the discomfort, those type of things. And I believe that there is a tremendous impact that can be done remotely and then allow the individual to experience some relief. And then they can go on with the more definitive things. So if a person has heart disease or any type of, when I say heart disease, I'm talking about peripheral vascular disease, cardiovascular disease, or cerebral vascular disease. So anything that affects like a stroke, peripheral vascular, like cold hands and feet, the cardiac aspect itself, anything to do with atherosclerosis, I believe that we can have a tremendous impact in helping to alleviate some of the symptoms. And again, this is a functional type issue. And then they can go on to get more definitive treatment. But if we can show people that there's a way that they can get relief from the symptoms when, specifically when they've been refractory to conventional treatment, and if somebody's had a history of heart attack or other types of like interventions where they needed a stent placed or they had bypass surgery or and they're having some symptoms, those would be ideal candidates for us to, you know, put on this. And we want to record this before and after, plus have subjective SF-36 data that's collected, which isn't that extensive, but the person's experience is going to be the most important thing here.
Well, Dr. Bitar, what do we do? There are people out there all over the world listening, and if they listen today or they listen next week, and you still have a need to, you know, kind of follow through on this, how will they reach out? Where will they go? I don't want to leave them hanging there. What do they need to do?
Yeah, well, I appreciate that because, of course, I don't think that way, and that's the idiot in me, so I'm glad you bring it up and pointed out because I didn't even think about that. Send an email to Davina, D-A-V-I-N-A, and then the letter D is in Delta. So Davina D at drbitar.com, and just mention that you are interested in more information on the cardiovascular protocol and you'd like to participate in those 40 or 50 spots that we're going to have to collect more data and to get more information. So it's a 6-month program, and for these 40, 50 people, we'll just cut it off at 50. For these 50 people, they're going to get 50% off right off the bat, but they have to agree to certain things like, you know, collecting the videos, answering these questions once every 30 days so we know how they're improving or how they're worsening. And, you know, but we're not going to take them off any medication or anything. That's going to be up to them to decide what they need to do, want to do. We just want to see what's going to happen at 0, 30, 60, 90, 120, 180 days.
Okay, Davina D at drbitar.com if you're interested in participating in that. Okay, well, let's move into this. This is an appropriate connection here because headline at Live Science reads, these everyday, quote-unquote, drugs cause more harm than the illegal ones. Now, we could go to a lot of different legal drugs causing problems more so than the illegal ones, but here they're focusing on alcohol and cigarettes. And I don't think you'll get an argument from me or you, Dr. Bitar, about how harmful these toxic poisons are, but they are fully legal and they are so widely used, yet, well, overlooked sometimes, believe it or not, as a cause of serious disability, serious disease, including cardiovascular disease.
Yeah, so basically when you start looking at cigarette smoking, as you may remember, Robert, in the book, in the Nine Steps to Keep the Doctor Away book, I mentioned that in my world, cigarette smoking is the worst thing you can do, secondary only to illicit drugs. When I say illicit drugs, I'm talking about like intravenous heroin or, crack cocaine or something like that. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about necessarily things that may have a significant therapeutic benefit like marijuana that we've discovered, you know, that some people have known for many years, but that I have relatively recently discovered maybe in the last 4 or 5 years. So the cigarette smoking is the worst thing that you can do to your lungs, to your body. It's like spitting in God's face. The alcohol is, I'd rather have a person consume alcohol than smoke cigarettes, but alcohol, the same type of thing, it converts to formaldehyde, and formaldehyde in is embalming fluid. So there are things that happen from cigarettes and from alcohol that there's no reason that somebody should consume these things, especially if they're interested in living a longer, healthier life. There's just no place for those things.
I've argued that with the more we learn about cannabis, I would rather have people consuming cannabis than drinking alcohol. And, of course, the cigarettes.
Well, cannabis is beneficial, though.
Yeah.
That's what I'm
saying. Yeah, well, exactly. Because there are people that conflate these things together, and I think we need to make that distinction. Alcohol is something that our body can process because we know in the Krebs cycle of digestion, alcohol is produced. But at the levels of drinking we're talking about, that's devastating. I know people, you know, some people like to drink their wine a little bit, but still, even that's a stress on the liver. I don't think you can argue it's not. But this is where you have to strategize. If you do that, you have to do extra things to support that most vital excretory organ in terms of what's inside your body. But then this doesn't cover another aspect of toxicity, which are the pharmaceutical drugs that are also legal and are devastating.
Yeah, so this is a very important point. Some people will say, well, alcohol has benefits. And it has benefits because of the resveratrol and the antioxidants, some of those things. You know, my response would be then have resveratrol, or there's other things you can consume that have resveratrol in them, or some of the other antioxidants, the proanthocyanidins, et cetera. So it is important to distinguish what we're talking about, like with the marijuana, or, you know, some people may not understand exactly what we were trying to say, but there's certain things that the body that are conducive to the body. So cigarette smoking, the reason I mentioned cigarette smoking as being the worst, other than IV heroin or something like that, is because if you have a fire that you're in a campfire, and you stand in the way of the campfire when the smoke blows into your face, you're going to experience coughing, and it's not going to be pleasant. And if a new person's smoking a cigarette, they're going to cough the same way because the lungs were not designed to ventilate smoke. It just wasn't designed that way. So we're bypassing a normal physiological response, which is going to be a coughing response to get rid of this irritant and this toxic substance we're taking into our body. So cigarette smoking by far, far and away is the worst thing to do.
All right. When we come back, final segment of today's show with Dr. Bitar, it does relate to cardiovascular health. Theoretically or actually, we're going to quack like a duck or, I don't know, cluck like a chicken and find out what comes out. And should you be eating it? Right after the break.
Who'd you say that masked man was?
It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's
Robert Scott Bell.
Here I come to save the day.
Information is so good, it requires no expiration date. The Robert Scott Bell Show.
I would have to play this theme song, see if you can identify it, because a celebrity death has just occurred. We just heard about Superdome was just messaging me. How does this sound? Da 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 da. I can't hit that note. Remember that sound?
Dun, dun, dun.
There you go. You remember what that was from, Dr. Bitar?
No, I don't.
That was the Superman theme song. And apparently Margot Kidder, who played in the Christopher Reeve Superman movies, passed away at the age of 69 today. Unknown causes. She had suffered, I remember, about some so-called psychological. I don't know what was going on in terms of depression, but we would argue microbiome, heavy metals, essential fats, who knows, but probably treated always medically. But unknown causes. Margot Kidder, she played Lois Lane in those Superman movies originally with Christopher Reeve, has passed away at 69. So speaking of cardiovascular, I don't know if that has happened, but a lot of women, some have argued as many or more than men, are suffering with cardiovascular disease even today. Now, could it be because of eggs? Eggs. Now, I ask that facetiously because if you're longtime listeners to this show, you know better. But here's, should be a moment of doubt. I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to read the headlines. Dr. Bitar, sunny side up, eggs won't increase risk for heart disease after all. Is that news to you or anybody out there? Did we lose Dr. Bitar? Did I hear a click on the final segment? Mackenzie, good luck. See if you can get him back on the line. And I'm just going to carry on with this story. It's like, eat an egg, it goes straight to your heart, you're going to die of heart disease. Why? Because the yolks contain cholesterol, and that obviously is the cause of heart disease. So they finally acknowledge, apparently, that, well, you can eat all the eggs you want. It's not going to elevate cholesterol levels, even if cholesterol is the cause of heart disease, which we know it's not. So big news there, Dr. Bitar, or not?
Yeah, well, it's not big news. In fact, my patients, you can go back all the way to 1996 when I opened my office, and I would tell people that that's ridiculous, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about eggs. Eggs are the perfect food, and I have recommended eggs to my patients forever. In fact, my own triglycerides and cholesterol, my triglycerides were over 2,000, and I was only on a anti-lipid on a triglyceride medication for maybe a year when I was my first year in the Army, and I had so much profound muscle weakness, I stopped. And my lowest triglycerides are today. And I routinely, for a number of years, I would eat 2 organic eggs every day. Haven't been doing that now because some foxes kill all my chickens, so I don't have as much access to organic eggs. But I pretty much consume 1 or 2 eggs every day, pretty much every day. I'd say 5 days a week. And there's just absolutely no science behind it. In fact, if you look at cardiovascular issues, it's all hyperinsulinemia. It's all related to sugar content, right? How much simple carbs to take in. And that's literature that's not 10 years old, and yet they're still talking about cholesterol and eggs and this and that. So I'm glad finally somebody published this, but this is not new information. And if you have cardiovascular disease, as far as I'm concerned, you should be consuming a healthy serving of eggs every week, at least an egg every day, if you can possibly doing that.
And some folks out there are very strong advocates of obviously free range, organic, clean, fresh, right? Eating them raw for some other benefits that when you cook them, obviously some things might be changed.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily recommend eating it raw or anything like that. You could have some other issues that could potentially develop, even though raw eggs are probably fine, but then there's a possibility of getting salmonella poisoning.
The general concern, because we are not in control of that from farm to market, or if you have your own, that's a different story. But again, there's validity, as I said, to do the Rocky thing and drink it raw and you'll be fine. But again, you've got to take that risk on your own if you believe it is a risk. But good news is, folks, more validation of things Dr. Batar and I have been saying for many years. Cholesterol is not to be feared. In fact, I've argued as I lectured at Total Health about neurological integrity. The people with the highest cholesterol levels tend to have the longest lives, longevity, and greatest cognitive capacity well into old age, little or no dementia, Alzheimer's, etc. It's a very protective part of your brain and nervous system and nerve cell.
That, and also their sex drive is better. Mm-hmm. The hormone, the sex hormones, actually all the hormones are produced in a better balanced format, because if you think about it, the precursor to all the sex hormones is cholesterol too. So
yes,
it's not what everybody's made it out to be. Eggs are good, and sometimes some people think actually cholesterol, people have high cholesterol, it's almost compensatory. So
yep,
if you have not high enough cholesterol, you need more.
Bring it up, fuzzball, as we say. All right, Dr. Batar, we're about out of time. Great, great advanced medicine episode. Tell them what they need to know, because we got to go.
The power to heal is unequivocally yours.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.